You are listening to The Breakfast Show with Jerry D, a Cool FM and Panama Broadcasting Corporation production. The Breakfast Show, better than coffee.
The Breakfast Show is brought to you thanks to Imquinto Venti Quattro. You publish it, you'll sell it.
Hello, good morning.
And a very good morning, boys and girls, to each and every one of you. It's a very good morning. Welcome to Tuesday. It is the 19th of April, The Breakfast Show with me, Jerry D, here on 89.3 Cool FM. The time right now, about a minute and a half after the hour of six, and I'm going to be sitting here keeping you company or being well for the next 4 hours. Today, being the 19th of April, let's take a look, shall we? See if there's a couple of things here relevant to today's date in the world of entertainment. We're going to go back initially to the year 1945. It was the musical Carousel, based on Molinar's Les Hommes, opened the Majestic Theatre in New York City. Now, I tell you what, something else opened on this day going back in 1958 in London. Remember it well. The Marquee Club opened its doors for the first time.
Good morning, world.
Here comes the sun.
Morning.
Good morning in the morning.
Morning.
Buenos días en la mañana.
Transmission will start in 5 seconds from now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1,
the best place to be in the mornings.
The Breakfast Show with Jerry D.
The Breakfast Show. It's better than coffee.
Give me a time.
Culture Club, of course.
Do you really want to
hurt me? And I was preceded by the Greg Kiln Band and Jeopardy. Well, it's a very good morning, boys and girls, and welcome to a Tuesday morning. The time right now, keeping an eye on the time, I'm just making our way to 11 minutes. That's after the hour of 6 o'clock. Busy morning this morning. In the 8 o'clock hour, I've got Dr. Thomas Rowley coming to talk to us. Author and educator, amongst many other things as well. And in the last hour, it's Tuesday. That means feisty foodie Sarah. She's going to be on the line with us in the last hour today. Check in with Ingrid, of course. See what's happening in the world of country folk. And Yasmin, of course. And plenty of great music going right through as well till 10 o'clock this month. I was going to say Monday morning. It is Tuesday, which is not such a bad thing.
The one desire to dance the swing could catch it all night long. But when I'm riding on that wing,
bist noch hier. Vielleicht gehe ich mal zu dir hin. Und dann kannst du mit mir.
The weather report as well. There we go. That is Swiss electronic music band Yellow, which goes back to 1979 when they originally formed in Zurich. For most of the band's history, Yellow has been a duo, really, consisting of Dieter Meier and Boris Blank, and founding member Carlos Perrin. Well, he left the group in 1983. And, well, I tell you what, that works out rather nicely, because that has brought us exactly to 15 minutes right now after, you've got it, after 6 o'clock. So it is time to get you in the shower, get you all spruced up, smelling nice, and on your way to wherever it is you're going on this Tuesday morning. And what do we got for you? How's about a little bit of Mambo Italiano? There we go. That's your shower song for this Tuesday morning. Yes, there's a bit of mumbo jumbo, or mambo jumbo, mambo italiano. And that's it. Off your way to wherever it is you're going on Tuesday morning, 19 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock. Mumbo Italiano, by the way, that song written by Bob Merrill goes back to when he wrote it in 1954. And that was for the American singer Rosemary Clooney. The song became a hit for Clooney, reaching the top 10 in record charts in the United States and in France, and number one in the UK singles chart as well, early in 1955. It's been very enduring, that song. It's been very popular, and several cover versions, of course, over many years. The version we played, by the way, is a good version by Dean Martin, I remember. He did a great version of that. But the version we played, that was British electronica duo called Shaft, and they covered the song and released it as a single in the year 2000. It was the follow-up to their 1999 hit, which is Mucho Mambo. Sway. That was another good song, Sway. Remember that? The version reached number 12 on the UK singles chart, peaked within the top 40 in Australia, Denmark, Iceland, Ireland and Sweden. And it was later included in the duo's 2001 album, which was Pick Up on This. Well, you know what we did here, don't you? What do? We built this city. What do we build it on?
Saturday, not seeing that bumper-to-bumper traffic.
Starship and We Built This City. Our breakfast show time, 25 minutes. That's after the hour of 6 o'clock. And when we opened up this morning, I mentioned the Marquee Club in London had opened up on this date back in the year 1958. Although I was much too young in those days to go to the Marquee, I do remember. It's one of those clubs, it's moved around a lot over the years, but it's still going. The last move, as far as I can tell, was it opened its doors at 14 Upper St. Martin's Lane in London's Soho area. That was 5th of September in 2007. So still going. Been going since 1958. Part of, London's music history and night scene as well, of course. 26 minutes exactly after 6. Nothing but a good time. That's what we're giving you right through to 10 o'clock this morning. That's the American glam metal band Poison. It was off of their second studio album, which was called Open Up and Say Ah. Two different B-sides on that one. Living for the Minute was the B-side over in the United Kingdom. And Look But You Can't Touch, that was the American B-side. Right, time on the breakfast show. It is exactly half past the hour of 6 o'clock, or if you prefer, it's now sort of 29 and three quarter minutes before 7.
You are listening to The Breakfast Show with Jerry D, a Cool FM and Panama Broadcasting Corporation production.
The Breakfast Show is brought to you thanks to Inventa 24. You publish it, you'll sell it.
¿Qué tal, Javier? Ahí vi que estabas vendiendo tu carro.
Sí, mira que ya se vendió.
¡Wow! ¡Qué rápido! Yo te lo quería comprar.
Sí, se fue volando. Usted encuentra 24. Ingresa ahí. Hay miles de carros que se publican diario y súper seguro para comprar o vender.
Encuentra 24, la plataforma digital más innovadora para buscar, comprar, rentar o vender lo que quieras. Encuentra 24. Si lo publicas, lo vendes.
You know, there's no avoiding it. Tax time is here again. If you have to do your taxes up north there for Estados Unidos, well, it's that time of the year. And this year, H&R Block have got many filing options to make it easy for you. Their tax professionals are here to do your tax return with or without the office visit. Now, you can drop by the office, or you can use the drop-off service, or a tax professional can even do your taxes virtually. You can contact H&R Block Panama at hrblock@cwpanama.net or on 260-1037, or you can WhatsApp and call on 6674-1037. Block, they've got your back.
What's up, your car won't start, you can't travel and breaks your heart. Valet Motors will fix it or get the parts. Just call 6431-0419 and your car will be fine with Valet Motors.
Valet Motors.
It's Morning Radio, The Breakfast Show with Jerry D on 89.3 Cool FM from the heart of Panama City in English.
And it is great to be with you on this Tuesday morning. It is Tuesday, it's the 19th of April. Some of the local news that we'll look at in a bit more detail later on this morning at 8 and 9 o'clock, starting with yesterday's epidemiological report from the Ministry of Health. Reports 184 new infections of COVID-19 in the last 24 hours. Now, to detect the new cases, 3,385 tests applied, which showed a positivity of 5.4%. The report indicates that no deaths from the disease were recorded, so the death toll remains at 8,179. Active cases, they total 2,302, of which 2,220 are in home isolation and 82 hospitalized patients. Those in isolation are divided into 2,200 at home and 20 in the so-called hospital hotels. There are 72 patients hospitalized in the wards and there are 10 in the intensive care units. The Minister in Charge of Health, this is Yvette Berrio, confirmed on Monday that the epidemiological reports on COVID-19 register an increase in cases in some sectors of the country. Berrio explained that despite the increase in infections in some areas, the admission of patients to hospitals has not increased, which keeps the authorities somewhat calm. She added that although the pandemic is in the country is under control, we must bear in mind the virus, it's still here, still among us. It's not gone away yet. The Ombudsman, Eduardo LeBlanc, announced that today, the 19th of April, he will present the report on the complaints of alleged sterilizations in the Ngarbe Bugli region. Last Friday, Indigenous people denounced supposed surgical procedures of salpingectomy in the region without due consent. They do go on to say that on the 20th of February, personnel from the Public Ministry and the Ombudsman went to the area where the alleged affected people were. Well, on that occasion, the Ombudsman's office reported that they were unable to speak with any of the alleged victims since the community did not allow the Public Ministry to enter. More on that story later on. The Administrative Council of the Judicial Career, which governs the judicial branch, approved the calendar of activities for the evaluation of judges and magistrates at all levels and jurisdictions for the period 2022-23. This is one of the core steps established in Law 53 of 2015, which created three careers. This is judicial, public defence and judicial administrative. On the 22nd of March of this year, through an agreement, the Administrative Council of the Judicial Career, chaired by Judge Abel Augusto Zamorano, announced the start of this process that seeks to guarantee equal opportunities for all evaluated, due publicity and transparency. Moving on from that, that's quite a long article, but say that's covered more detail in 8-9 o'clock. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs, led by Erica Moines, reported that at least 20 countries have confirmed their attendance at a regional meeting on migration to be held from today and tomorrow, 19th and 20th, in Panama, and will include participation of the head of U.S. diplomacy, Antony Blinken. For more than a year, we have been working with the United States and other important American partners to find common ground and areas of articulation to address this phenomenon and avoid an unprecedented humanitarian crisis in the region, said Chancellor Moines. When the beginning of the process of collecting signatures approaches on the 20th of April to revoke Mayor José Luis Fábrega, he resorts to the Electoral Court to clarify if tables will be installed throughout the country. The request was made before the Regional Directorate of Electoral Organization of Central Panama of the Tribunal Electoral, which on the 3rd of March admitted the revocation process after a request from lawyer Roberto Ruiz Diaz, dated 22nd of February. Well, Fábrega says that he has information to the effect that signature collection centres will be installed throughout the country. If such a thing were true, he adds, it would be illegal, because only voters from the District of Panama can participate in the process. And lastly this morning, an interesting article, how car thieves managed to rob their victims of their vehicles. 3 weeks ago, Luz Maria witnessed it herself. Now, she decided to buy a used car directly from the owner through the internet. They quickly agreed to sell to her. She gave him $6,500. He gave her the car, a copy of a key, and all the vehicle papers. In a couple of days, he said that he would give her the other key. Well, 48 hours later, she parked in the same shopping plaza where she made the transaction, her place of work, but when she left, the car was gone. Well, when reviewing the security cameras of the premises, the authorities observed that two men opened the car with a key and left. And she ended up, well, there's more on that story, but she did end up $6,500 out of pocket. And the documentation she had apparently proved to be false. Be very, very careful with your car. You'll be very, very careful anyway in these days, but do make sure you sort of observe everything around you. Make sure that there is nothing untoward. I'll tell you more a little bit later on how to keep a little bit more secure when it comes to your car, etc. We are 22 minutes before the hour of 7 o'clock on this morning's breakfast show. Pointer Sisters, they're asking, should I do it?
Loving
Breakfast Show with Jerry D.
Two in a row. That one was the Go-Go's and Vacation. And that won't be long. Tell you what, we booked our vacation back. It was it last March and it seemed to be such a long time away. Natural fact, it's July of this year. We're going off, all being well, if there's not a war in Europe. We're going off to do a river cruise. That'll be rather nice, going through Germany and ending up in Austria. Let's say, completely digress. Go-Go's and Vacation. Before that, as I mentioned, the Pointer Sisters and Should I Do It. Don't forget, by the way, let me just tell you a couple of things here, because we're running our a little contest. Remember, I told you about that yesterday, and I'm going to be talking to you today. Did it yesterday. Going to be talking to you today again about somebody called Pedro Mandinga. Yum. And that's Mandinga rum as well. Now, we're going to be talking about it today. We did yesterday as well. We're going to be talking about a few things. Then tomorrow, we're going to be asking you to answer a couple of questions about what we're talking about with Pedro Mandinga. And the winner can join us. We're going to be going, Yaz and I, and perhaps a couple of other people, but also you could join us for a trip around the Mandinga Rum Distillery, which is here in the city in La Rosaria, with 6 o'clock. Chance to see how the rum is made. And also, no doubt, have a little sample as well. Now, we're talking about Pedro Mandinga, because I was very interested, because I never realized exactly what Pedro Mandinga, or who Pedro Mandinga was. Well, he's a legendary figure in Panamanian history. He was the chief of the Cimarrones, who built small hidden towns among the Caribbean coast. That's probably why he didn't know about them, because they were hiding. Pedro Mandinga was a brave and skilled leader with a deep knowledge of the Get this one out. Inhospitable, there we go. Inhospitable territory, where he found himself. And he also, by the way, and this is the one that's saying, he also acted as a guide and a partner to Sir Francis Drake. So we'll be telling you a little bit, a few things about Mandinga Run as we go through the program. I'll make sure I get them all in as well before, 8 o'clock. And then tomorrow we're going to be asking you a couple of questions, and, all the people that give us the right answers, we'll put in a hat and we'll draw out a winner to join us for a tasting and, a look around, the distillery where they make Mandinga Rum. That's on Thursday night at 6 o'clock in the evening. How good is that? Oh.
Come on, let's cruise, you got nothing to lose, so come on, let's cruise, you got nothing to lose, so come on, let's cruise, you got nothing to lose, so come on, hey baby, come on. Spot, paradise by the sea. We'll find a place to park that's kinda cool off the block. We'll take a trip on up to the lake, down by the river, where we can make out on the island, pick up on the kid, punch up your favorite station, toss in your
when we go through the lake. All of these years.
The Rolling Stones are Waiting on a Friend. And before that, it was the Beach Boys, and that was called Still Cruising. And we're cruising away here on The Breakfast Show. I was rather curious to say today, back in 1958, was when the Marquee Club opened up in London. Quite a historic club. It moved around quite a bit. It moved in, 1964. They moved from their original location. They moved into Wardour Street, which was where I remember them, because Wardour Street backed onto where my mother worked when I was a kid. Of course, 1964, I was a teenager. but the thing is, who was the first artist to perform? Good question here. 90 Wardour Street. Who was the first artist to perform at the inauguration of the new Marquee Club at 90 Wardour Street on the 13th of February back in 1964? Well, first of all, of course, was the supporting act, and that was the Yardbirds. The Yardbirds for Your Love. And that was the opening act, and one of the main acts of that night was a guy called Long John Baldry. And there's a song from the early 70s, Let the Heartaches Begin.
So hard to bear. So let the
Mr. Long John Baldry, Let the Heartaches Begin. Before that, it was the Yardbirds, the opening act for him and for your love. Time on the Breakfast Show. It is the top of the hour.
Escucha Cool FM 89.3 con la música más refrescante en tu radio.
Cool FM.
The Breakfast Show with Jerry D on 89.3. Cool FM, the best place to be in the mornings.
And the time on the best place to be in the mornings is exactly 1.5 minutes. That's after the hour of 7 o'clock. Time to take a look at some of the international news for this Tuesday morning. Russian forces tried to push through Ukrainian defences along almost the entire front line in eastern Ukraine on Tuesday, launching what President Volodymyr Zelensky called the Battle of the Donbass, the long-awaited second phase of the war. A very large part of the entire Russian army is now focused on this offensive, Zelensky said in a video address overnight. No matter how many Russian troops they send there, we will fight. We will defend ourselves, said Zelensky. The Chinese city of Shanghai on Tuesday pleaded for public cooperation with a massive new push to test most of the population for COVID-19 as it tries to bring community transmission down to zero after nearly 3 weeks of lockdown. The plea came as some people refused to join PCR testing queues out of weariness after weeks of such requirements or fear it puts them in a greater risk of infection. Residents shared stories on social media about busloads of people being taken from their homes and sent into quarantine, including babies and the elderly. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will apologise to Parliament on Tuesday as he faces lawmakers for the first time since he was fined by police for breaking his own COVID-19 lockdown rules, a government official has said. Well, Johnson, who will address Parliament at around about 2.30 GMT, was fined last week by the police for attending a birthday party thrown in his honour in June of 2020, when people from different households were not allowed to meet indoors. The International Monetary Fund will consider providing quick financial assistance to debt-burdened Sri Lanka following representations by India, Sri Lanka's finance ministry said on Tuesday. A delegation headed by Sri Lanka's finance minister, Ali Sabri, kicked off formal talks with the IMF in Washington on Monday for a program the government hopes will help top up its reserves and attract bridge financing to pay for essential imports of fuel, food and medicines. As China's domestic tourism has started to unravel, desperate provinces are slashing ticket prices, offering tax breaks and even begging locals to help save plummeting tourist earnings in a sector that employs tens of millions of people. The slump in tourism, which includes travel, accommodation and catering, has persisted into 2022 because of wider COVID-related curbs on inter-province travel, lockdowns and endless mass testing, official data has shown. The United States is seeking to seize a superyacht suspected of belonging to a Russian oligarch that is docked in the Pacific island nation of Fiji, according to an application for a restraining order filed on Tuesday by Fiji's public prosecutor. The luxury vessel, the Amadia, is widely believed to be owned by Russian oligarch Suleiman Kerimov, sanctioned by the United States and the European Union. The vessel arrived in Fiji a week ago after leaving Mexico 18 days earlier and crossing the Pacific. Police are now investigating. Greece has seized a Russian oil tanker off the island of Evia as a part of European Union sanctions imposed on Moscow over its invasion of Ukraine, the Greek Coast Guard said on Tuesday. Earlier this month, the EU banned Russian-flagged vessels from the 27 nations' bloc's ports with some exemptions as it adopted new sweeping sanctions against Russia. The Russian-flagged vessel, the Pegas, with 19 Russian crew members on board, was seized near Karistos on the southern coast of Evia, which lies just off the Greek mainland near the capital Athens. Digital rights watchdog group Citizen Lab said on Monday it had warned British officials that electronic devices connected to government networks, including some inside the Prime Minister's office and the Foreign Ministry, appeared to be infected with Israeli-made spy software. The spy software, which is known as Pegasus, is a product of Israeli cyber arms dealer NSO Group, according to a blog post published by Citizen Lab. We confirm that in 2020-2021 we observed and notified the government of the United Kingdom of multiple suspected instances of Pegasus spyware infections within official UK networks, the blog post reads. And that's it. There we go. That's some of the things in the international news this morning. Oh, Pegasus gets everywhere, doesn't it? We lost ours somewhere. $13 million and we lost it.
Yeah.
Well, come on, no more sweet dreams. It's time to get up and go off to wherever it is you're going. We're 11 and a half minutes exactly after 7 o'clock. That is Eurythmics and Sweet Dreams. I got a guest coming to join me in the 8 o'clock hour this morning. That's Dr. Thomas O'Reilly. We'll be talking, I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. Plenty of great music, of course, going right through until 10 o'clock this morning. We'll take a look at the weather in around about, 3 or 4 minutes' time after this. See what's happening. The blinds are still okay. And I see a bit of sunshine as well. On the Breakfast Show, exactly 16 minutes. That's after the hour of 7 o'clock this morning. We're going to take a look and see what's happening with the weather. It's quite a cloudy day and quite warm yesterday, but I didn't notice any rain during the course of yesterday, so certainly here where I am. But anyway, look, let's start off this morning and see what's in store for we're going to be looking over in the Caribbean first as we take a look at Costa Arriba in the province of Colón. 28 degrees Celsius will be the maximum temperature today, with 24 degrees being the minimum. 32 degrees, that's a thermal sensation, which isn't bad at all, you know, when we consider we're up at, 38 yesterday. Relative humidity as well being rather kind today over there in Costa Rica at 74%. This morning, chance of isolated showers, though, also in the afternoon and also tonight as well. So little sprinklings of rain coming during the course of the day. Make sure you got your paraguas with you. Moving over to West Panama on this side of the province, 30 degrees Celsius, that's the maximum temperature, with 24 degrees being the minimum. Thermal sensation, not too bad at 35 degrees Celsius. 79% is the relative humidity. Partially cloudy during the course of this morning. Isolated showers in the afternoon. And back to being cloudy tonight. Now, let's move along the coast to us here in the metropolitan area. We've got 29 degrees Celsius being the maximum temperature. Gosh, that isn't bad at all, with 25 being the minimum. 34 degrees, that's the best so far, isn't it? 34 degrees centigrade, that's the thermal sensation for us here in the city today, with relative humidity at 76%. Partially cloudy during the course of this morning. I can vouch for that right now. We've got the sun peeping through the clouds right now. Isolated rains with thunderstorms possibly during the course of the afternoon, and a few showers tonight. Moving out into the Gulf of Panama, we've got 29 degrees Celsius being the maximum temperature, with 26 being the minimum. 35 degrees will be the thermal sensation. That relative humidity is way up, though, at 86%. Isolated rains with thunderstorms during the course of this morning. Stormy rains in the afternoon. And tonight, isolated rains with a chance of a few thunderstorms creeping in as well. Now, let's move over. Let's take a look at maritime conditions. We are a maritime nation. Let's take a look. Let's start off with the tides for today, starting on the Pacific Ocean. We've got two highs and one low. We've got high tide. That was at 5:30 this morning. That was just under the 5-metre mark at 4.97 metres. Low tide, that'll be at 11:37 this morning, and that'll be minus 0.18 of a metre. High tide again, 5:45 this evening, or late afternoon, that'll be 5.18 metres. Yes, a very high tide, up over the 5-metre mark. On the Caribbean, let's see what we have in store for us. We've got high tide, that was at 2:21 this morning, that was 0.34 of a metre. Low tide will be at 10:32, that'll be minus 0.12 of a metre. High tide again, that's going to be at, or was rather, at 5:06 p.m. am I talking about, and that'll be 0.06 of a metre. We can't go backwards with our tides, can we? Can we, boys and girls? No, of course we can't. At the last low tide, that's going to be 7:23 tonight. That'll be 0.03 of a metre. All right, so there we go. There's the tides. Now, let's take a look at the actual water condition. If you're going to be using a boat during the course of today, good conditions for you on the Caribbean during the course of the morning. Winds are light at 10 to 15 kilometres an hour coming from the northwest. Waves, just 1 foot. Not too bad if you're boarding this morning. This afternoon, still good conditions prevailing. We've got 12 to 16 kilometre an hour winds during the afternoon, and that is coming from the west-northwest. Waves, though, they're staying there at 1 foot. On the Pacific coast, no advisory for this morning. Good conditions, 5 to 10 kilometre an hour winds coming from the northeast, so just a light breeze coming from the northeast. Waves, they're going to be at 3 feet. During the course of the afternoon, though, we do have a small craft advisory for you. The winds are picking up, 25 to 30 kilometre an hour winds in the afternoon. They'll be coming in from the south-southeast. And the waves, they're going to go up. They're going to go up to 4 feet. So there you are. Whether or not to get the boat out. Breakfast Show time, coming down for 21 and a half minutes after the hour of 7. Nora Branigan and Gloria. If you remember, yesterday we did play an Italian version of that, and Mary Lou was just saying, I prefer the Italian version you played yesterday. Can't believe all the people all the time, can you? Good morning, Mary Lou. Hope you're having a better journey to work today. I think she is.
Day by day, love won't set itself free.
That's a little river band and Man on Your Mind. And time on The Breakfast Show, 29 minutes right now. That's after the hour of 7 o'clock.
You are listening to The Breakfast Show with Jerry D, a Cool FM and Panama Broadcasting Corporation production.
The Breakfast Show is brought to you thanks to Encuentro 24. You publish it, you'll sell it.
¿Qué tal, Javier? Ahí vi que estabas vendiendo tu carro.
Sí, mira que ya se vendió.
¡Wow! ¡Qué rápido! Yo te lo quería comprar.
Sí, se fue volando. Usted encuentra 24. Ingresa ahí. Hay miles de carros que se publican diario y súper seguro para comprar o vender.
Encuentra 24, la plataforma digital más innovadora para buscar, comprar, rentar o vender lo que quieras. Encuentra 24. Si lo publicas, lo vendes.
You know, there's no avoiding it. Tax time is here again. If you have to do your taxes up north there for Estados Unidos, well, it's that time of the year. And this year, H&R Block have got many filing options to make it easy for you. Their tax professionals are here to do your tax return with or without the office visit. Now, you can drop by the office, or you can use the drop-off service, or a tax professional can even do your taxes virtually. You can contact H&R Block Panama at hrblock@cwpanama.net or on 260-1037, or you can WhatsApp and call on 6674-1037. Block, they've got your back. Well, just 29 and a half minutes right now before the hour of 8 o'clock. We're going to take a look at some of the international business news for this morning. But first of all, though, don't forget our Pedro Mandinga little competition we're going to be doing. I've been telling you all about Pedro Mandinga rum yesterday and today. I mentioned earlier on who Pedro Mandinga was, which is all rather interesting to say. I was absolutely amazed when I found out that he'd acted as a guide and a partner to Sir Francis Drake. Now, do you know what the main ingredient is for Ron Pedro Mandinga? Do you know what it is, the main ingredient? It is, in actual fact, distilled from sugar mill scraps, made by hand. It's all made by hand in small quantities in the Boquete area. Now, do you know in which other countries artisanal rum is distilled with scraps or scrapes? I tell you, it's easy. Only in Panama. That's it. Nowhere else. Just here. So these are, you know, we're going to be asking you tomorrow to answer some questions about Pedro Mandinga rum. And the winner that is chosen will come with us on Thursday. We're going to go and visit the distillery here in the city. It's not far to go. So that's all going to be great fun, isn't it? Now, let's take a look at some of the international business news for this morning, Tuesday morning. European shares were lower on Tuesday, while yields on 10-year U.S. inflation-linked bonds were close to turning positive for the first time in 2 years, as the prospect of aggressive Fed tightening to rein in inflation keeps investors on edge. And investors were also preparing for the next barrage of earnings that will help them assess the impact of the Ukraine war and a spike in inflation on company financials. Heineken, Nestle and Renault are all report out of Europe this week. Netflix, Tesla and Johnson & Johnson are all scheduled to report this week from the United States. So say earnings can be interesting. Yields on 10-year U.S. inflation-linked bonds held near the 2-year highs that they reached on Monday and are within touching distance of turning positive, as we say, for the first time since the onset of the pandemic. Oil prices, they seesawed on Tuesday as investors fretted over tight global supplies after Libya halted some exports and as factories in Shanghai prepared to reopen post-COVID-19 shutdown, easing some demand worries. Brent crude was down 26 cents or 0.23% to $112.90 a barrel. This was at 6:43 GMT today. This was after rising, by the way, more than a dollar to $114.21 earlier in the session. U.S. West Texas immediate crude, WTI, that fell 45 cents or 0.42% to $107.76 a barrel. This was after it had risen to $108.92 earlier. Russia on Monday flagged a likely further cut in interest rates and more budget spending to help the economy adapt to biting Western sanctions as it heads for its steepest contraction since 1994. Russia faces soaring inflation and capital flight while grappling with a possible debt default after the West imposed unprecedented sanctions to punish President Vladimir Putin for sending tens of thousands of troops into Ukraine on the 24th of February. Putin said on Monday that Russia should use its state budget to support the economy and liquidity when lending touching positive. Putin said on Monday that Russia should use its state budget to support the economy and liquidity when lending activity has waned. The World Bank expects the economy to shrink by more than 11% this year. United States inflation is far too high, St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank President James Bullard said on Monday, as he repeated his case for increasing interest rates to 3.5% by the end of the year to slow down what are now 40-year high inflation readings. What we need to do right now is get expeditiously to neutral and then go from there, Bullard said at a virtual event held by the Council on Foreign Relations. But with economic growth expected to remain above its potential, he added, the economy won't fall into recession and the unemployment rate, now at 3.6%, will likely drop below 3% this year. And more than 40 crypto business leaders have asked the European Union not to require crypto firms to disclose transaction details and dial down attempts to bring to heel rapidly growing decentralized finance platforms. The European Union, like countries and jurisdictions across the globe, is working to tame the freewheeling crypto sector. The EU is ahead of the United States, and Britain is developing a set of rules for the $2.1 trillion sector. And two on automotive subjects. Rivian Automotive Inc. This says here that CEO RJ Scaringe needs to sell a lot more electric vans and pickup trucks to boost a beaten down stock price and fund his ambitious long-term growth plans. But the startup is having trouble buying the parts to build them. Scaringe can't get all the semiconductors Rivian needs to accelerate the assembly lines at its factory in Normal, Illinois. Chip suppliers are skeptical of the young electric vehicle company's capability to hit promised production numbers. They are instead allocating more chips to established customers based on the numbers of vehicles that they have built in the past. Scaringe said this was during a tour of the carmaker's plant. And carmaker Stellantis said on Tuesday it was suspending production at its Russian plant due to logistical difficulties and sanctions imposed on Moscow. The world's fourth largest automaker, which produced and sold the Peugeot, Citroen, Opel, Jeep and Fiat brands in Russia, has just 1% of the country's car market. It runs a van-making plant in Kaluga, around it's about 125 miles or 201 kilometers southeast of Moscow, co-owned with Japanese carmaker Mitsubishi, which halted production at the facility earlier this month. Those are some of the things in the international news for you this morning, Tuesday morning. Time-wise, we are 22 minutes, and that is before, that's before the hour of 8 o'clock.
And a happy dance. Won't you forgive me, girl? Hey,
there we go, working my way back to you, mate, from the Spinners. And a very good morning to Mary Lou. Mary Lou's happy this morning. She says, it looks like I'm going to be on time for work, which is always nice, isn't it? I don't normally have too much of a problem, personally, but I only have about 50 feet to go. Anyway, Mary Lou, I'm glad to hear your good news. It's a bit of an improvement on Monday, isn't it? You asked if we could play something for you this morning, coming from the Eagles. And it's this one, One of These Nights.
Pretty mama,
we go, one of these nights from the Eagles for Mary Lou, helping her get to work in a good mood this morning. Let's also say a very good morning to Renee. And she said taxes were due yesterday. She said both our daughters called on Sunday in a panic. Dad, I need help with my taxes. Well, you know what to do, don't you? You know, there's no avoiding it. Tax time is here again. If you have to do your taxes up north there for Estados Unidos, well, it's that time of the year. And this year, H&R Block have got many filing options to make it easy for you. Their tax professionals are here to do your tax return with or without the office visit. Now, you can drop by the office, or you can use the drop-off service, or a tax professional can even do your taxes virtually. You can contact H&R Block Panama at hrblock@cwpanama.net or on 260-1037, or you can WhatsApp and call on 6674-1037. Block, they've got your back.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
There we go, the Beatles and Taxman, a request that came from Renee, I guess, going up to the daughters this morning, that one. I guess it was all supposed to be done yesterday. Good luck. My guest, don't forget, joining me in the next hour this morning's program, in the 8 o'clock hour, Dr. Thomas Aroli is joining me in the studio. He's a former university professor, entrepreneur, CPA, and a veteran. He's got a passion for helping families and youth develop their critical thinking. And through his extensive university faculty experience and business background, has impacted thousands of lives across the Americas with his approach and framework. This is what we're going to be talking about. Dr. Rowley has got a couple of books out, both dealing with the same topic. It's Empower. It says Empower Your Children. And it says, teach kids to ask meaningful questions, recognize bias, and stand up for themselves. Okay, that's one of them. The other one is Empower Your Children, and that is a version for teachers. So this could be an interesting subject. A lot of you know my feelings about education, but it's interesting. Asking meaningful questions. I thought, don't we sort of ask questions as a natural sort of a response, I suppose. Anyway, it's going to be interesting. Dr. Thomas Rowley joining me in the in the 8 o'clock hour this morning. It is Tuesday, and so don't forget, what does that mean? That means at the 9 o'clock hour, the last hour, we're going to link up with our feisty foodie, Sarah Solomon, and see what she's cooking up. Something for Passover this week. She said we did Easter last week. Passover, that started the weekend. It goes on for 8 days. So that's coming up during the course of the rest of the morning. There we go, there's a flock of seagulls and I ran. You often get to large flocks of seagulls. They sort of sit around on the rocks out here, looking out over the bay here, looking towards the island. They'll come make a lot of noise. Flocks and flocks of seagulls. I wonder what it is they call it when they all fly away together. Oh, I know, flock, never mind. Right, let me just remind you, a little competition about Pedro Mandinga rum. Do you know how many stores, by the way, Mandinga rum stores, they are in Panama, And they got to, I call them, not so much stores, I call them bars, because they're really nice, really nicely decorated. They got everything you want there, something to eat. The first one opened in Casco Viejo. And the second one, where I went not so long ago, that was in, it's in Via Argentina, right opposite the park. And how many types of rums do Pedro Mandinga offer? I'll tell you, silver, spiced, blended, geisha and cocoa. And got a couple of them here in the studio. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be asking you a few questions about Pedro Mandinga rum and Pedro Mandinga himself. And the winners, they can join us, yes, and I and a couple of friends. We're going to be going to the distillery, the Mandinga Distillery, and we're going to be going there to find out how it's made. And no doubt have a little sampling as well, as you do. Take us up to the top of the hour. Don't bother or don't stop believing. You can keep bothering to believe. Journey it's from, and the time right now is 8:03. It. Don't stop believing, and that's from the band Journey for you for this morning. Time on the breakfast show. It's news time.
Escucha Cool FM 89.3 con la música más refrescante en tu radio.
Cool FM. You are listening to The Breakfast Show with Jerry D, a Cool FM and Panama Broadcasting Corporation production.
The Breakfast Show is brought to you thanks to Encuentro 24. You publish it, you'll sell it.
¿Qué tal, Javier? Ahí vi que estabas vendiendo tu carro.
Sí, mira que ya se vendió.
¡Wow! ¡Qué rápido! Yo te lo quería comprar.
Sí, se fue volando. Usé Encuentra 24. Ingresa ahí. Hay miles de carros que se publican diario y súper seguro para comprar o vender.
Encuentra 24, la plataforma digital más innovadora para buscar, comprar, rentar o vender lo que quieras. Encuentra 24. Si lo publicas, lo vendes.
It's Morning Radio, The Breakfast Show with Jerry D on 89.3 Cool FM from the heart of Panama City in English.
There we go, that's it, a little tour on this morning's breakfast show, this little trip with Toto, going off to Africa. I tell you what we're going to do, we're going to go to El Valle.
Good morning, Panama! Good morning, Jerry. Hey, yes, how you doing? Well, it's a good thing you don't pay me because I overslept. I had a busy day yesterday. We had to move some furniture around in the city, get it in a truck, and then try to get it to El Valle. And boy, oh boy, my little arm's tired. Whoo, it was a good thing, though. I'm back in the city. I realized that it was actually more quiet on Saturday night in the city than I'd heard it in I don't know how long. Obviously, because the next day was Easter Sunday and the beginning of all these wonderful things. But it was just so weird to have it so quiet. Normally, they have such a big party outside of my window there over on the in Paiti. And I thought, well, okay, this is nice. I can't say I don't like it. And then I heard the cock-a-doodle-doos of the cock and crows. That was kind of weird. I was like, okay, so I'm in the countryside and I hear birds. I'm in the city and I hear chickens. Well, that's okay. It's a beautiful morning. I have got, oh my goodness, about 30 mangoes on the patio that I'm going to have to clean off, and about another 25 ripened bananas that I'm going to have to put in the freezer. I'll tell you, oh yeah, they're good in smoothies. But it's been a beautiful day, and it's already started, and I just can't wait to get outside. So I'm going to leave that to all you. Be safe, be careful, be clean, and back to you in the studio.
There we go. Big thanks to Ingrid. An everyday story of country folk. Bit of brass in pocket from the Pretenders, then I introduce my guest for this morning, Dr. Thomas Aroli. There we go. Yes, so the Pretenders and Brass in Pocket. And I've got with me this morning, I'll tell you what, it's a good opportunity to introduce to you my guest, Dr. Thomas Aroli. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, better give you a microphone. Good morning to you, Tom. Hey, you were saying, because I asked you, it's a little bit like how people pronounce David Bowie's name. And some people say Bowie. But I made a point of actually listening to him talking, and he pronounces it Bowie. And you pronounce your name, your last name is Rowley. So I did ask you, do you say Rowley or Rowley?
Indeed, Rowley. The only one that ever corrected it was my mother. And when I started my CPA practice, clients would ask me, and I'd say, I really don't care how you pronounce it, just spell it right on the check.
And pay. Exactly. Thomas, I was looking here at your sort of background. You mentioned, so you were in the military, in the Air Force.
Yes, sir.
And like myself, which is good. You went into teaching, for me. And I'm interested because we're going to be talking about, two books you brought out, both with the same topic. It's Empower Your Children. It said, teach kids to ask meaningful questions, recognize bias, and stand up for themselves. When you were a teacher, did you find then that the kids were asking stupid questions or what?
Well, some of them always, but as a teacher, you've got to remember there aren't any stupid questions.
That's true.
But the book you see is really the second edition.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a book when the pandemic started, and I was seeing some decisions being made that just didn't make any sense. And I'm trying to figure out, well, where do these people go to school? They haven't learned how to solve a problem. And so I started to do some research. I'd been out of academia for a number of years. I taught here in Panama for a decade. And what I was teaching, technically, was business and professional speaking.
But okay.
The kids were supposed to do research projects. Well, these kids were coming out of their best private schools here in Panama and knew nothing more than basic math, good English skills. So I said, well, you know, you've got to get some grounding in how to differentiate the research papers and the professor's opinions that you're going to hear over the next couple of years in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to teach them what I now call and what others would recognize as critical thinking.
Right.
Asking the right questions about who wrote it, why did they write it, when did they write it, and who was the audience, what was the intention,
mm-hmm.
and more importantly, what is the reputation of the individual who wrote what you're reading? How accurate have they been in the past with their predictions and their projections? And from that, I started to go back and look, and I discovered that the education system that I went through in the late 60s has dramatically changed in the last 40 years.
Oh, absolutely.
And intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to write a book about how did it happen? I look at things as a problem solver.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you solve a problem, you got to first identify what's the problem, what's the cause, what's the source, and you look for alternatives of what the reasons might be that could have created it.
There's another word for that which I like to use. It's called logic.
Exactly. Exactly. You know,
it's a process. Everything has a step by step.
Follow through the steps.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I remember sort of having to do marine disputes, sort of being in the fuel delivery business. And you'd always have somebody would come up with, you know, with some kind of... But at the end of the day, it was simple. There were certain stages that you had to go through, and you just checked out each one, and you would normally find where the problem is. But it's interesting what you're saying, Thomas, about education, because, you know, I was educated, you know, my secondary years were sort of in the 60s. I left school at 16 in 1965, and that's when I joined the Air Force. But education then wasn't education. It was a means, or it was a method of retaining information, and that is all. And I also went on and did some management consultancy work as well. And this is where you could see, and I actually came across it, where you had somebody who was extremely highly educated, university degree, etc., etc., but he had no ability to actually put the information that he'd learned into practice in a logical or in a way that made sense. So I've always sort of said, well, you know, what is your definition of education?
Well, I would think that people who are educated have an understanding of how the world works around them, how to recognize what's positive and negative, how to evaluate the information. We're inundated with information.
Oh, even more so now. It's scary.
And how do you sort it out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what sort of surprised me when I first started teaching here in Panama is I would ask the kids, okay, where is your source of news? Where do you get your information?
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt, everyone that's in the, what we call the millennial age, social media.
Oh, no, absolutely.
And I said, yeah, well, that's fine, but if you want to find out facts, I mean, social media is perfect if you want an opinion.
Hmm.
You want to know what 19-year-olds in Panama City think, look it up on your Facebook page. But how do you know that what you're reading from somebody else is actually factual, or is it simply their impression or their opinion?
Do you think that is something that's changed? I mean, even in other, when you picked up the newspaper, it was controlled. It was, you know, and I think the thing now, there was an interesting little piece just mentioned on the BBC the other day, and that was about access to information you're just talking about. And it said, well, you know, whereas in the days you would pick up your newspaper and you'd see what was there, at the end of that, you made a decision for yourself. You made your own decisions. But now they said you're inundated with so many alternatives, so many different definitions of one simple thing, that it's very difficult, as you say, to know what is out there, what is absolutely true. I mean, for me personally, I call it information overload.
Oh, and yeah. Well, I think we all experience that.
And, yeah, but some of us can't get it all in, you know. I said, because I said, the problem with my brain is it's just not got enough space anymore. Because, you know, doing, you know, working like this, I mean, you can see the number of sort of screens, access to information I have, which makes doing a job like this a lot easier. But I do feel, I mean, you know, good friends of ours at King's College, I remember then, funnily enough, when I was talking to them, you know, hugging the kids, good grief, you know, but having that sort of interaction with
personal
children,
relationship,
that we would never know when I was being educated, because the math teacher, if you didn't, you know, repeat it quickly or whatever, would pull you up by your sideburns, you know, and they would walk around with a strap.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Those were the good old days.
British discipline, yeah. You get arrested for it today in America.
So we've talked about, so your definition then of meaningful questions, because as you mentioned when we started, you know, there's no such thing as a stupid question. I mean, if somebody asks a question, it's because they obviously believe it's meaningful.
Or they think they want to know the answer.
Or they think they want to know the answer. I mean, from my perspective, I mean, I was a very sort of introverted child. And even today, I'm always reluctant to ask questions because I'm afraid that question might seem stupid to other people. And that, to me, is an obstacle.
Well, when I was teaching, I had taught accounting. I'm a CPA by trade. And I would try to make it clear to the students, if you've read the material,
mm-hmm.
and you have a question about it, ask. I'm a Yankee, come from New York and Boston, grew up in that area, mm-hmm. talk fast, especially when I was teaching here in Panama. I talk fast.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's something that you don't understand, you know, raise your hand, say, whoa, professor, hold on a minute, would you repeat that, please? I'm happy to explain what I had to say. But the meaningful questions are more seriously looking at the reason why somebody wrote something, what the reputation of the writer is as to their reliability and their ability to present unbiased information.
Mm.
Or if it's biased, that they acknowledge their bias, say, okay, I'm coming at this from this perspective, and I think this is the situation. And my argument in the book is that we should be looking at identifying the causes of things. We're going to dispute how we might resolve them, because people are going to have different perspective on the role of government, for example. But there ought not to be an argument about what's the cause of the problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The solutions we can argue about, politely.
Right.
But those we can debate. But we shouldn't be debating about what's the source of the problem.
Isn't there also a problem today that people don't want to debate? I mean, if we use an example, look at the U.S. culture right now. You know, I mean, it's so divisory that people in their own families don't talk to each other because they can't do it. There are so many issues today. I mean, you know, at my age, I mean, I'm finding, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, why, what has happened to the United States? I mean, there is a country which, you know, was held in so much regard, but they're fighting with each other and, you know, how do you get it across to the younger generation today is that's not the way that we should do things?
No, it's not. And part of the problem I discovered through my research on the book is that public education in the United States for the last 20 years has pretty much gutted history.
Mm.
They don't teach civics. They don't teach people what are the roles and responsibilities of citizenship. There was a survey done a few years ago that was basically a shortened version of the immigration exam that immigrants who want to become U.S. citizens have to take.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Only one state in the entire country had a passing grade, and that was Vermont, which is a little small state. There was a huge difference between the age of the people who got good answers and those who didn't. Those over 60 got 80% of the questions correct. Those under 40 got 25% of the questions correct. They haven't been taught.
Well, and we've been around longer. I mean,
well, yeah, but the questions were things like,
oh, listen, you know, I mean,
free speech.
Tommy, you go look. I mean, I remember when, if you want to go back, I mean, you want to see how difficult things were, go back and look at one of the old Victorian exam papers. They are absolutely scary. I mean, even when I was at school, so I was, good grief, I could, you know, never sort of work those things out. We've got to a point with education, and we want to get back to more about this, but we have got to a point with education where it seems to be dumbed down in order to get the results that they want. In other words, you know, if they want, oh, you know, hang on, we're not getting enough passes in the GCE exams. Well, you know, we better change them then. You know,
well,
instead of the other way around.
In some cases, they've lowered the standards.
Exactly.
And in other cases, they've pushed aside civics, they've pushed aside critical thinking skills and citizenship skills to focus on math and science.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically teaching to the test. And as a result, some of them are doing pretty good with math, but they can't tell you. You show them a picture of past presidents and famous people. They don't know who they are. There's no connection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's troublesome for an old professor like me who says, well, why don't you know that? How could you not know that? Which is why I got into doing the research and some.
But it's interesting when you say that because, it's sort of dumbed down. But the thing is, we have access to more information right now than we've ever had. In mankind's history, we've never had access to say you can go anywhere and do anything by looking at a black screen. You can go, you know, I sometimes look at it in awe and saying, you know, I turn that on, I can go anywhere.
Yeah.
I can go to a museum and look around. I can find out what's happening in a country where, I can get information by the minute or by the second as to what is going on in the world. So there's no real excuse of not wanting or not having that information other than the fact you're not interested.
Well, part of that, and what I've observed from the students that I had for a decade when I was teaching here, is they don't think they have to remember anything because they've got immediate access to it at their fingertips on their phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's very true. So in your book, the book is Empower Your Children, Teach Kids to Ask Meaningful Questions, Recognize Bias, and Stand Up for Themselves. What is the main message you're trying to get across? Now, the book is written, I would say, you've got one for teachers, which are in the teaching profession. This, I would imagine, is for your children. So this is for the parents.
Parents and grandparents.
What is it you're trying to get across them that they need to do?
They need to get their kids used to asking pertinent questions about who says who.
Mm-hmm.
The favorite question of a lot of kids is why?
I was going to say, you know, the one that when I was a kid, hey, why? Well, it's because
it could drive you nuts asking why. But answer it as accurately as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And to get them into the habit, starting with them very young. I think we would have courses at the, in the U.S., the kids can step out of public education in most places around the eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So there should be a class in the seventh grade that teaches them these basics about citizenship and about asking good questions. And I go through, there's a couple of books that I used when I was teaching the material.
Mm-hmm.
There's a list of 11 good questions that you ask to try and get at the logic of how did we get from A to B.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my goal is to develop what I consider a cadre of respectful skeptics.
Mm-hmm.
And people who can politely, persistently, and be prepared to ask questions and challenge authority.
Oh, exactly. I mean, that's one of the beauty of being a human, is our ability to question and not to. I mean, this is one that, you know, reasons even when you come to so many things in life. You know, we have the ability of making our own decisions and going in a direction that we want to go in. It's like, you know, if we get the thing, well, you've got to have faith. I don't have to have faith. I have to have information. I have to, you know, you need to tell me. Don't just tell me I need to have faith. You need to tell me why I need to have faith. Because faith is something which is not tangible. It's there because you say
it's conceptual.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I mean, in a way, I'm happy I'm the age that I am, because I certainly will not be able to understand things in another 20 years' time. It's bad enough now. I remember somebody was talking about the metaverse. And I said, you know, and this was a program from India, you see, and I was watching it a little bit and said, you know, and I thought, what are they talking about? And now I've sort of looked into it. It's a little bit more clearer, but, you know, I'm getting into realms of life that I just don't understand. And I can understand now why my parents didn't like the Beatles very much. The thing is, you know, mine is for a family to encourage dialogue, to encourage questioning, and not to have a biased opinion of your own. In other words, let this all come out. Yeah. When you were working in education, how did you find the students? I mean, are they? I was a terrible student. You know, a lot of my listeners know, because I've said it before, school was my worst enemy. If there were 30 people in the class, I came 31st. It didn't matter how many trains my father tried to bribe me with to get better. I was no good. But the best thing that happened to me, we mentioned earlier, I joined the Air Force. And I learned a thing called practicality. I was always logical, and I'm street savvy.
That's a very important skill.
And that is, and it's a question of survival and getting on. And, again, I've mentioned on the show, one of the best pieces of advice my mother gave me, she said, if you go for an interview and they ask you if you can do something, always say yes. Then go away and find out how to do it. Where do you see the main problems then in education? Do you believe that education has improved dramatically? You know, you mentioned from, you know, 40 years ago, in the reaction, in the way that the school reacts to pupils. This is what I always found. You know, as a pupil, when I was at school, you know, it was a scary place to go, because, you know, you had your favorite teachers. I always liked the arts teacher. She was very nice. But it was a severe experience. It was something that, you know, it wasn't lovey-dovey, which is the impression I get, you know, I get now. I mean,
you and I may have had similar high school experiences. I wasn't a big fan of school in high school. I left school early, went in the Air Force, and very quickly realized that the difference between the guy with the rank on their collar, who was telling me what to do, who I didn't think was any smarter than I was, had a piece of paper. That piece of paper was called a college diploma.
Right.
So I just said, well, I better get one of those. And I ended up getting a bachelor's degree in accounting and a minor in economics. I got an MBA, a master's in human resource management, and a PhD to teach. I don't have a high school diploma. The process, the question you asked me, really, do I think education has gotten any better? No, I think it's gotten much worse. I don't think they're teaching what people need to know. They're teaching what they want them to know. They're not teaching kids how to learn. They're teaching kids what to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very objectionable.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we're going to take a quick musical break. We'll be back with my guest. That's Dr. Thomas Rowley. And this is Because the Night from Patti Smith, which, by the way, was released on this day, on the 19th of April.
Take me now, baby, here as I am. Pull me close, try and understand. Desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
There we go, that's it. Patti Smith, and Tonight is the Night. That was 1978. It was released on this day, the 19th of April. My guest with me is Dr. Thomas Rowley. We've got a couple of books out, Empower Your Children, Teach the Kids to Ask Meaningful Questions, Recognize Bias, Stand Up for Themselves. I love that, because I remember one of my grandmother's expressions to me when we were at the table, at the dinner table or the tea table or whatever, and we were discussing, and I would ask a meaningful question. And my grandmother would say, dear, little boys should be seen and not heard.
One of my father's favorite expressions.
How to shut the kids up. So there was a... I mean, I think, you know, we were just talking while we were listening to Patti Smith, and I think we both sort of decided, yeah, I think we'd better give up on education. But questioning is important. And I mean, when I was at school, questioning was not encouraged. It was, you know, keep repeating your two times table. This one is for the parent. What about the one for the teachers?
Well, there, I wrote a companion to the book for a teacher's guide.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a professor, I knew that if I wanted to implement change, if I want to get teachers to do something different in the classroom, I got to make it easy for them. Got to make it simple. So I wrote a series of lesson plans and a very condensed 2 or 3 page summary of the points that I'm trying to make in the book. And one of the keys is listening.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much that kids could ask stupid questions. You got to ask yourself, well, why do you want to know that? Or why don't you know that? What piece are you missing?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's the communication cycle isn't in one direction. It's a loop.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And each of us, you come from Great Britain, I was born in the United States, our cultural differences are huge. But we're of a comparable age, we've got a lot of experience, we have ended up in the same place 70-something years later,
mm-hmm.
and our experiences have brought us to a crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
But my experiences are different than yours.
Of course.
So when I
mm-hmm.
see something or I hear something, my interpretation of it is likely to be different than yours.
Of course.
And we need to be able to give feedback in that feedback loop when we communicate. If somebody says something, say, well, why do you think that? Or what's your rationale for that? So, okay, now I think I understand. It's a quote I use in the book. There used to be a poster in the 70s. I think it said something like, I think you understand what it is that I said, but that isn't what I meant. And we've got to get paraphrase,
mm-hmm.
feedback. Say, okay, well, what I heard you say, what I understood you to say was this. Is that correct? Otherwise, we're diverging from one another. And so that's the other piece, and that's, I think, a piece that teachers need to do more of. Rather than being professorial, whether they're in the second grade or the senior levels of graduate school, it should not be a one-way dialogue. It shouldn't be a monologue.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't be preaching. We should be teaching. And teaching includes asking the students if they understand it. And that's not just on a written test where they get a score at the end that says, yes, dummy, you didn't get it, or wonderful, you get a gold star on your forehead and go home and brag to your parents. We need, in the process of learning, to be asking those questions, say, okay, do you get what it is that we're talking about? And I found in the course I was teaching here in Panama, the easiest way to do that was to put students in little groups, give them an assignment, and then have them report back about what it was that they did.
But this is an important life skill anyway. And I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, where I grew up, where I learned, was in the Air Force. Because when you're out in the middle of the desert and you've got a compass and you've got a Land Rover, which is made of metal, we did have one of our commanding officers who insisted on reading the compass in an armor-plated Land Rover. I mean, the damn thing must have been spinning around. It must have been like a fan. And we got lost. But you had to find out where you were, which direction you needed to go, how do you need to leave clues if you don't, you know, find out. And this is, you know, this to me is, Len, this is like I said to you, look, I don't believe that education for finish when you finish your university or when you
it just gives you the foundation.
And what I would like to see is if government's bringing in a sort of plan where, okay, you finished it, now you have to do 1 year minimum of internship and 2 years.
Okay. I think 2 years
fine.
Of some sort of government service, civil service, whatever.
Absolutely, because that way you're actually in a world where you have to apply the information that you've stored, because, you know, when we're born, we're like a computer, and we are programmed, and you're programmed to retain information, like we put information in a computer for that computer to go on using it, and it's how it is applied. And this is what I say, even if it's a 2 year internship where, you know, you start off in the mailroom, but you're learning what's happening in the company, you're learning business, and they involve you in what's going on. Firstly, it's a plus for the company. It's, you know, because it's government sponsored. It's definitely a plus for the student, because they do get experience of being with other people in a working environment. It's so different than sitting in a classroom and being taught or whatever. And that should be the final part of an education before you get your degree, because you get a report from somebody who says, yes, he's got the knowledge, but he is unable to apply it properly. Or, you know, it's like I say, you acquire the knowledge of a lawyer, which we have a few here in Panama. If you learn the law, if you learn all the different sort of intricacies of law, that's great. But it's how you apply it when you're in the courtroom, or how you apply it with your clients or whatever. That is what makes the difference between a good lawyer and somebody who just goes in and fulfills a function.
Yeah.
And to me, that is important. And it does come down to what you're saying, because encourage kids to ask questions. And don't bat them off. Find an answer. Find a student and say, you know, we're going to, you know, let's sit down and chat about it and talk about it.
Yeah.
So don't forget to get the book. The book is available where, Thomas? I know it's on eBay. Amazon.
It's on Amazon. It's also going to be in the Hombre de la Mancha here in Panama. All their stores will be carrying the book and the teacher's guides in English and in Spanish. So folks who are interested can go to their local bookstore and probably find it. Most of us are a little less mobile and want to go from store to store to find things, so we go to Amazon and make Bezos rich. But
trust me,
it works.
Sometimes I've ordered a nut and bolt from Amazon because I just can't be bothered to spend a week going around to find out who's got one.
Exactly.
Renee's coming and says, sadly, some students know the information but panic during tests. And they are not successful because of that. So, again, I think that comes down to confidence, doesn't it, really?
Confidence and, of course, experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the feedback that you give the student who does poorly that is crucial, I think. I made it a point when students would do a presentation in my class, I graded them, and I gave them grades, and I sat down with each one of them one-on-one and said, okay, you did this, and you did this well, but these two pieces you need to work on. You need to improve this piece. And it was personal. It was in context. The problem often is if somebody says, screw, oh, you're just a dumb. We're just going to cast you aside and ignore you. And that doesn't work very well.
No, it's the same when I went to join the Air Force. My teacher laughed, or my head teacher laughed, in front of my mother, and said, you must be joking. And anyway, I did apply. I applied to be an airframe fitter with the Air Force. That was the first thing I wanted to do. And I went up in front of, went and did some tests and aptitude and whatever, and ended up in front of the squadron leader. He looked and he says, He says, Gerard, he said, your maths. Unfortunately, we can't do it. And of course, the headmaster thought, yeah, I told you so. You wouldn't get in. So if you don't succeed, try again. So I applied again as a photographer. Now, I was pretty good at photography. And they got it. Yes, it's actually a job in the Air Force, a photographer. And I went along, and you're not going to believe it, I ended up in front of the same squadron leader. And he looked at me and says, you're back. He says, I hate to tell you, but your maths haven't improved so much since I saw you last. And he said, look, I don't have any more vacancies for photographer. Would you be interested in being a telegraphist? Now, you know, I'm not dumb. Telegraphist has got the same number of letters in it as photographer.
Yeah.
So I said, I'll take one. And that's how it all started. And I went in, I did, at 16, I went in as a boy entrant and trained in anything to do with communications. That was Morse code. Anybody remember Morse code? Telex, which is how, but it got me out. And I mean, I spent, I was tactical signals in the Middle East, that's where I worked radio. I was in Singapore for 3 years. I traveled the world at, the government's expense. The other thing as well, which I think is so important, is always take opportunities. All right? Don't be afraid to give it a go, because it's better to give it a go and not necessarily succeed rather than not give it a go and say, I wish I had. And, that's been a lot of my philosophy in life. And also, one little conversation can change the whole direction of your life. So talk.
Exactly. Ask and listen to the answers.
Absolutely. And so if you don't know the answer, go and find out. Tell them. Thomas, we come to the top of the hour. Empower your children. That's in here in the bookstore in Hombre La Mancha.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So they're English and Espanolish. So you can pick that up there. The teacher's version, both versions of the teacher's?
The teacher's version is in both. The book itself is only in English.
Okay. So make sure your kids speak English when they ask you questions. I think this is great. I think the idea, and I think Mary Lou was just saying, she 100% agrees that education has got worse and not better. And as I keep telling people, if you don't get a good education, you could end up doing a radio program. So there we go. Thomas, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
We'll have some information on our website today about your books, where people can get it. You can go, don't forget, to Amazon. That's Dr. Thomas Rowley, R-O-W-L-E-Y, and you'll find the books there. Do look them up, and if you've got kids, keep talking to them and encourage them to talk to you. That's the other thing. Right?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Thomas Rowley with us here on this morning's breakfast show, and that has brought us, look at that, gosh, talk about efficient. That has brought us exactly to the top of the hour.
Escucha Cool FM 89.3 con la música más refrescante en tu radio.
Cool FM.
You are listening to The Breakfast Show with Jerry D, a Cool FM and Panama Broadcasting Corporation production.
The Breakfast Show is brought to you thanks to Encuentro 24. You publish it, you'll sell it.
¿Qué tal, Javier? ¿Qué tal, Javier? Ahí vi que estabas vendiendo tu carro.
Sí, mira que ya se vendió.
¡Wow! ¡Qué rápido! Yo te lo quería comprar.
Sí, se fue volando. Usé Encuentra 24. Ingresa ahí. Hay miles de carros que se publican diario y súper seguro para comprar o vender.
Encuentra 24, la plataforma digital más innovadora para buscar, comprar, rentar o vender lo que quieras. Encuentra 24. Si lo publicas, lo vendes.
We have the best music from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and beyond. Join us for the latest news and great interviews. The best place to be in the mornings. The Breakfast Show with Jerry D. Cool FM 89.3.
A man, you don't know what he wants. You don't know if he cries at night. You don't know if he don't. When nothing comes easy, old nightmares are real. Until you've been beside a man, don't know how he feels. Once inside a woman's heart, a man must keep his head. Heaven opens up the door where angels fear to tread. Some men go crazy, some men go slow, some men go just where they want, some men never go. Oh, blame it on midnight. Ooh, shame on the moon. Thank you.
There we go. That's Bob Seger there and Shame on the Moon. Breakfast show time. We are 18. No, we're on for 20 minutes. That's after the hour of 9 o'clock. Still to come, we're going to link up with Feisty Foodie Sarah up there in Canada. We'll be chatting with Sarah. We're going to be doing some Passover dishes today, because we did Easter last week, but Passover started last weekend. Goes on for 8 days, so we've still got time for that. Right now, though, this is Elton John, or Sir Elton John. Mustn't forget the old title, must we? This is called Little Genie.
Oh, little genie, you got so much love. Little genie, and you take it well in stride.
Little genie, just that so bright. You're my delight, and that's why I love you so.
Fatback Band with a very abrupt finish there, and I found loving following on from Elton John's Little Genie. By the way, just looking at some of that information in the news this morning about car thefts. One thing to do, just one piece of advice, it doesn't matter where you go. What I always make a point of doing is if I have my car in, say, one of the car parks, in the multi-story car parks, I always go towards the car with my finger on the, if you've got one, finger on the button on the remote control, that basically sets off the alarm of the car. If you feel uncomfortable and you think there's somebody around you, just push that button. If you're getting in, if your car, like my car, I'm very fortunate, my car, when you release the door, it only releases the driver's door. So what I do then is I just sort of get into the car, and immediately lock the door again, so we don't have any unwanted visitors getting in the other side of the car. All right, once I get in, just release my driver's door, get in, and immediately lock the door once I get in the car as well. Keep an eye on your surroundings and make a look. If you're driving, have a look behind you. See if you've got a car which is staying around there for quite some time. Just a bit of common sense. If you are buying a car, be very careful. Like that lady, she sort of got a key. The thing to do then, I would suggest, is if you just got the one key, well, there's not much you can really do about it, is there? Be very, very careful. Be alert. And if you're doing a transaction, don't give the check until you've got, you know, say, if they said, well, I'll give you a key and the documents, and we'll give you the other key when we got it. Say, well, okay, fine. When you've got the other key, call me, and then we'll do it. Mind you, they'll probably have another one cut in the event. You can't win, really, can you? Just be very careful out there. Don't fall for these things when they point to your tyre and say you've got a fat tyre, all right? Because that happened to me. Just ignore it. Go away. If you stop the car, you want to check it, do what I did. I went into the car park of Super 99 and stopped it there, where I was surrounded by other people and other cars. Okay? Just to be a little bit careful. It's time to go up north. Say good morning to Sarah.
Good morning. How are you?
And a bearded wonder.
Look at this guy.
Good morning. Whoa. Tell you've been away a while. Look at that.
Only place it grows now.
Well, yes.
that I could show on radio.
Hey, lovely to see you both. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. How's your week been? Other than, you know, sounding like you were almost robbed.
Almost.
Robbed? Were you robbed?
No. It was, there's a piece in the news today about a lady. She went along to buy a new car, and they agreed to sell it to her. So what happened is she gave them a check. They gave her a key. and said, we'll give you the other one in a couple of days. We've just got to find it or whatever. And they gave her all the documents as well for the car.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
off she went. And then 2 days later, she went back to where she worked. And she came out. The car'd gone. And when they checked back and they looked at all the CCTV footage, two men turned up with the key, got in, drove it away. They did find the person who had the car, and all his documentation was all okay. All the documentation she had was false.
Wow.
So
yeah, no, you always got to leave like a little something.
Yeah.
We learned that the hard way also. You always got to leave a little saldo.
Yeah. No, so, but it's a difficult situation. I was just saying, it's difficult because... you know, if you say, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to pay you till you got the other key, I assume they just go and get another key cut and then give you two keys. And then, you know, I don't see, it's a difficult situation that, I mean, how do you...
Yeah, if it's a key that you can just get cut, if it's not one of those, like, kind of, you know, the fancy ones that they have to issue at the dealership.
Yeah,
the chip, if they're planning to do this.
Yeah, that's like Jerry said, you know, what a shame. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a key with my car. I have, it's like a, you know, one of the, but you actually you have to put it into the car, which I quite like. It won't just work if you've got it, with you. You actually have to get in, actually have to put it in a slot in the car, and that sort of shuts down all the other sort of alarm systems. The other thing on my car, what I like, when you lock it once, it locks all the doors. When you lock it twice, it's a deadlock. In other words, if you break the window of the car, you still can't open the door.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's a deadlock. So and I think somebody would notice if you got your feet sticking out of the window. So, so we got two feisty foodies this week then.
So we had a bit of a cook-off this morning.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So what, you know how we celebrated a little bit of Easter last week with some brunch recipes, mm-hmm. and I hope everybody had a beautiful weekend with family. And, however, we started Passover last Friday. And so I wanted to give you kind of one of the most iconic breakfast recipes that we make every Passover that we always did in my family. But, and so what we kind of realized, well, we knew this, but, you know, we face it every year, is that our families made matzah brei in two different ways. So my family made a savory version, and Corey's family made a sweet version.
Oh, okay.
Right? We put maple syrup on ours.
Right, but, and they have slightly different textures. So we actually, you know, in honor of you there in Panama, look at this, we cooked... Just before the show. So I made my version.
Hang on. You're there, and I'm here.
Right.
And you're showing me the food that you cooked this morning.
Right, yeah.
If you make the recipe, you can end up with exactly this conversation in your own home.
Yeah.
Right. There's a good reason to go and see a psychiatrist.
There you go.
It works for us. So my version is a savory version.
Okay.
And it uses... half the matzah that Corey's version uses. Okay,
uh-huh.
So mine is more kind of like scrambled eggs with soft and some slightly crunchy matzah in it. And his is more like matzah forward.
Yeah.
And a sweet
mine
version.
Has exactly twice the amount of matzah.
But let's sort of start explaining to you, what is a matzah?
Okay, ooh, okay, let me go get it for you.
But while she's doing that, I can say that matzah is unleavened bread.
Okay.
During Passover, when the Jews were escaping from Egypt, they didn't have time to, you know, make the sourdough and wait for the leavening and wait for the yeast and the bread to rise. So they basically had to make these cracker-like things, and I mean, there are different variations, but they kind of look like this, and they're like a somewhat bland...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, kind of bland.
But you eat it with butter, cheese.
Okay.
Whatever, peanut butter, cream cheese.
And it reminds us of what our forefathers did when they were getting out of Egypt and the hardship that they faced.
Mm-hmm.
So
for 8 days, we don't eat anything with leavening or any bread or anything that rises. No pizza dough, donuts, any pastries, anything.
Oh, well, never mind, Corey.
Pasta. Yeah, no
pasta, nothing.
No pasta, no lasagna.
And there's also another version called egg matzah.
That one's tough to find.
It's a little,
some places.
Yeah, I don't know if
that one has a sweeter flavor.
Yeah, it's a little bit softer and a little bit sweeter. So
we use regular matzah in our matzah brei.
Mm-hmm.
As you saw, it's more kind of pancake-like with some egg in it. And Sarah's is eggier with like some crackers sort of strewn about.
And so with mine, what we're going to do is we're going to, this is about for two people. So we're going to start off with four large eggs, and we're just going to add a tablespoon of milk and some salt and pepper, right? Because mine's a savory version. And what I like to do is I like to wet the matzah using hot water. And you, for this regular matzah, about 30 seconds is good, 30, 40 seconds, somewhere in that. You don't want it to be mushy. You're just making it wet. And as I said, I do leave some kind of slightly crunchier bits.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do, what I'm going to do for my version is I fry the matzah in butter first. So I fry my softened matzah in butter, and then I lower the heat and I add the whipped eggs to the skillet. All right? And then I'm constantly moving it in the pan so that, like you would make scrambled eggs, so that it just doesn't overcook, because we don't want it to go brown or start to get charred or anything like that. It changes the flavor. And then I serve mine with either some chives on top, some ketchup, or even some sour cream. Is a very common side dish with this kind of savory version of matzah brei.
I've seen it with brown sauce also. Some people have the savory with like HP. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, well, then this is sort of this is sort of scrambled egg with a matzah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the matzah's got different textures because it's already been softened.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
so there's crispy bits and kind of yogurt bits in your egg.
Which, incidentally, Zachary hates.
Yeah, our kids won't eat it.
Well, Noah ate it. Zach is not a fan of soft matzah in eggs.
I didn't know we had options.
Yeah, well, you know, me neither. We always just have to eat it. So that was the way it was.
Hey, they're yours.
Okay, that's why we get to complain about them.
Yep.
There was someone else's, that was
just young people. So, for Corey's version, where I used one sheet of matzah to four eggs, he uses two sheets of matzah to four eggs.
Oh, okay.
All right, so his has double the amount of matzah in it, which makes it a little bit drier and a little bit more kind of pancake-like.
I pour mine more like a pancake, kind of like with some bits of scrambled egg, like you're still kind of scrambling the egg. But mine is much, much more like a matzah pancake. Mm-hmm. Exactly what you expect a lot.
And his, you don't put any, you put like just a pinch of salt in it and no pepper. And it's also, at one point, kind of while it's cooking down, you can even add a little bit of sugar to it as well. So.
Well, but usually, because some people will still want it savory, because they can both be eaten sweet or savory, but the one that's eggier, I think it's like adding maple syrup is just odd on that much egg to me, where on mine, you could have it with sour cream and applesauce or just applesauce. You can still add pepper and ketchup to taste at the table. So if you're serving a large amount, double or triple or quadruple the quantities, it kind of scales up pretty well. And I, like for me, it would just tasted like a memory. Like that my grandmother, like my bubby or my mom used to make in my childhood, that it's not too sweet, just the maple syrup, and that's all you need.
So the main difference in the cooking application is that I fried my matzah in butter, and with his, you mix the egg into the matzah before putting it into the pan.
Ah, okay.
All right?
Okay.
So he kind of tossed the egg mixture over the matzah to make sure that it's fully incorporated. And with mine, because I'm frying off the matzah and some butter in the pan, I incorporate the eggs afterwards. So it also gives you a slightly different texture profile.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right?
Okay.
And then with his, while it's kind of finishing off, you can sprinkle in some cinnamon if you want, or some sugar. And then he tops his with a generous pouring of some beautiful Canadian maple syrup in a glass bottle.
Huh. Of course.
I don't know if you can find that, but...
any maple syrup.
Yeah.
It should be full.
The best maple syrup that we found there used to be at Price Mart. They had a Canadian maple syrup that was like pretty, a little plastic jug that was pretty reasonable.
Okay. Mary Lou says that she loves matzah, and she has hers with peanut butter.
Yeah, like Zachary.
Yeah.
That's the way he likes it, too.
We can't send him to school with that.
No.
So basically, then a matzah is a flat thing which hasn't got a lot of taste.
It really has a very little flavor.
So it's a little bit like a pretzel, really.
It's more like a flavorless cracker.
Pretzels would be a small step up in the flavor.
Yeah. And, you know, they have all that nice rock salt on it, which for some reason, I actually like my matzah with butter, softened butter, and then I put some salt on it. Or and enchilada. I eat it kind of simpler. Yeah, I eat it with enchilada as well, which is very South African thing to do. But you guys can't get it there, and apparently we're never going to be able to. Yeah, it's evaporating from the market. So any South Africans out there who have some enchilada, make sure you hang on to it. But not too long, because it goes bad. But, yeah, apparently they're just stopping to produce it. So there's a little foodie fact for you.
Go figure. Fish paste in a jar isn't the growing.
It took him like 12 years to come over to the dark side of being 15, willing to, okay, maybe, but no, he likes it now.
Now,
you see?
Now I kind of crave the fish paste in the jar.
See, and he ridiculed me for years.
That hasn't stopped.
It's really.
Actually, I remember as a kid, I can't remember the name now, but you used to get these little pots of different fish pastes.
Yeah.
And I just remember that. We used to have that in sandwiches and things like that.
I was raised on it, so for me it was kind of normal in my diet, but bring a Canadian into the mix who like has never seen these exotic foods, and yeah, you just, it took a long time to convince him even to try it. He used to not even want to be in the room with me when I ate it. It's kind of like Marmite, you know?
Now, the other thing, of course, you can do is you can, this one you could eat during the day instead of sweet biscuits, chocolate toffee almond crunch matzah.
Right. So now we're going to just kind of kick our matzah up a notch, and we're going to make a chocolate toffee almond crunch matzah. So for this recipe, we're going to use about 5 sheets of matzah, 2 sticks of butter, and then a cup of packed brown sugar. We're going to make our toffee with that, and then one and a half cups of chocolate chips.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably go with a semi-sweet instead of a milk chocolate. I think the milk chocolate with the toffee flavor might be a little too finely sweet. So I would go with a semi.
Mm-hmm.
And then a half a cup of almonds that we're going to toast either in the oven or in a frying pan, and we're going to chop those up. So we're going to start off by lining a baking sheet with aluminum foil and spraying it with a nonstick pan. And we're going to preheat our oven to about 350. We're going to cover the baking sheet with layers of matzah. And just, we want to cover the whole sheet, so we don't want to have any gaps, right? We're just going to cover it so that we've got one nice sheet of matzah. We're going to combine our butter and brown sugar in a small saucepan over medium heat, and we're going to stir it constantly until the sugar dissolves. So we're going to allow this mixture to come to a boil, and then keep it boiling for about 3 minutes. And this is going to be our toffee mixture. All right.
Mm-hmm.
If it seizes up on you a little bit, you can add a little bit of heavy cream to it, and that should help loosen it up. Just make sure that you're stirring it constantly.
Okay.
All right. Then we're going to remove the pan from the heat and carefully pour it over our matzah. And then using a spatula, or in this case, I've put an offset spatula, which is the one that has a bit of an angle on it.
Okay.
It kind of drops down, and that'll allow us to smooth it over the matzah nicely and just cover it up. It will spread a little bit as it bakes, so if you've got a few bare spots there, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to bake that for about 10 to 12 minutes, and we want to rotate our sheet halfway through, just checking to make sure that it doesn't burn.
Mm-hmm.
And if it seems like it's getting too dark, then remove the baking sheet from the oven. You could even cover those edges with some foil if you need to. And then once it's out of the oven, we're going to sprinkle our chocolate chips over our toffee layer and let it stand for about 2 to 3 minutes until the chips start to begin to melt. And then using our spatula, we're just going to, smooth it over and sprinkle our chopped toasted almonds on that. And we just want to kind of press them gently to adhere to the chocolate while it's still wet. And then we're going to cool this in the refrigerator and break it into pieces. So it ends up eating kind of like matzah bark, if you will. You got these beautiful layers of flavor from semi-sweet chocolate with the toffee, with the toasted almonds.
Lovely.
And you kind of turn this ingredient that otherwise has very little flavor into something delicious.
Oh, wonderful. There we go. That's a good one. Hey, tell me, with the Passover, you can't eat any bread. Are there any other dietary restrictions?
Well, for the Ashkenazim, there's a tradition in the European descent Jews like us that from the 13th century, where a rabbi ruled that beans, rice, corn, other legumes were, that we Ashkenazim wouldn't be able to tell the difference between that and bread, so it might confuse us. So something like that. I'm paraphrasing here, though. And
it's true, though.
And it's my version of the truth that that they decided in the 13th century that we Ashkenazim
might
can't
confuse
eat
it.
Lentils uh-huh. or chickpeas, whereas our Sephardic brethren did not have that same ruling,
mm-hmm.
and they are happily eating
rice
legumes
and
rice
beans and everything
and other things that the Ashkenazim consider to be chametz, which is the term for bread or leavened bread.
Hmm.
But in 2015, there was a ruling
among conservative
Ashkenazi rabbis that now we are smart enough, and so we can't eat rice.
But it was not accepted by the Orthodox. So,
okay. Well, you know, we're like
we're kind of in like
you know. So,
if it isn't bread or leavened, then it's kind of
yeah. Even they allowed popcorn, whereas the old school Ashkenazis wouldn't eat popcorn or lentils or any of that.
It's kind of leavened.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but it has no yeast in it. Yeah. I don't know. So anyway, they made that ruling, and it's easier for us. So we're sticking to the bridge ruling.
Well, this is, you choose the one that you suit you best, right?
Yeah, it's kind of that. Isn't all religion that
way? Everyone needs to do that to find what works for them.
Yeah.
A lot of people get a lot of joy from these traditions. Like the Passover holiday is really a nice one. It's probably the best one in our calendar.
There's another tradition that we're supposed to do, and we didn't. And that is to clear out your house of, well,
that's not a permanent record.
That is clear out the house of anything that is not kosher for Passover. So there's two different routes that people go. One is that, and you'll see actually there in Panama, they sell or give away all of their food in their cupboards, fridge, and freezer that are not kosher for Passover. And the other is to lock it into a cupboard and tape that cupboard up so that
and
you
they
can't
sell that.
Access.
They basically sell that through the synagogue to, it's symbolic
mm-hmm.
where they no
mm-hmm.
longer own that cupboard. That cupboard is no longer part of their house for the holiday. It belongs to someone else. And you also do a symbolic search for bread products in your home.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And there's like a sort of symbolic burning of the last trace of bread.
That's called that's called toast.
Yeah. It's kind of like your spring cleaning and your toast eating. It's a bit of a spring cleaning kind of holiday.
Toast is new to our people.
But
just
in the food cupboard. Yeah.
So now we thought the perfect drink to go with these kind of sweet and savory egg and matzah dishes was an espresso martini, which Corey's kind of, as you can see here, made me a hack of. Sorry, I'm not there.
Right,
I would have definitely.
Right, I think I'm going to turn I'm going to turn your camera off, I think.
And this is a hack that he made. I mean, calling it a martini is a bit of a stretch, but at the same time, at Price Mart, they used to have, like, before we left, and you can tell me if they still do, a cold brew coffee, and it was an excellent deal. And so if they have it, I definitely think you should buy it. It was from a brand called Stope. Looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a version that is sweet-ish.
It's
they also
sweet.
Yeah, they also have a version that is less sweet. But it was like $4 and change at Price Mart before we left. So if they've still got it, you know, done is he's just added some vodka to that
mm-hmm.
and, you know, a splash of milk and dropped in a couple of, coffee beans for decoration. But if you want to make it properly, we're going to take about an ounce to an ounce and a half of vodka, a little more if you want,
mm-hmm.
and, 1 ounce of hot espresso. Which, you know, we would make if our coffee machine was here, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And
because it's nice to have that crème.
And mm-hmm. this one also calls for about 2/3 of a coffee liqueur such as Kahlua.
Right.
And a bit of simple syrup. So maybe a half a teaspoon to a mm-hmm. teaspoon of simple syrup. And if you prefer, you could actually use Bailey's. instead of that would make a nice
one.
And a pinch of salt. And what we're going to do is we're going to shake all of those ingredients in a shaker with some ice and strain it into a martini glass. And this way, because you've got this little bit of coffee liqueur and these different liqueurs with the sugar content, you're going to get a bit of a crema on top. And we can just place the coffee beans in a nice little flower formation or something. I mean, Corey just kind of dumped in a few coffee beans.
It comes to a point where you just want to drink it. Like, I don't work in a bar.
In fact, I remember sort of being introduced to espresso martinis. It was at the original Avantika, if I remember rightly.
It wasn't that long ago.
The original was in the Trump, right?
That's right, in the Trump. And the thing is, they're rather easy to drink, aren't they?
Yeah. And you can drink a few of them, and then you kind of feel it after. It's kind of like a pisco sour, where you don't feel it initially, and they're yummy, and they go down easy, so you can drink a few.
The caffeine, the extra caffeine is nice.
Especially if it's a little later at night.
But, the espresso or this would have a nice little bit of caffeine. So, I mean, after a couple, it definitely is, you have your coffee food group and you have your vodka food group.
Yeah. It's a very well-rounded cocktail.
Yeah, but all the nutritional value you want your cocktail.
Well, I do have my, my bottle of, Mandinga coffee rum here in the studio, which is,
See, so you should pour a little bit of that, and then we can do a cheers, because Corey was, partaking.
I had a tiny little bit.
So we can do a little cheers in the morning.
I'm not refilling that.
Hang on.
Like, we're an hour later than you, so it's, we're almost at noon. There you go. Now we're talking.
I don't have a glass, but.
Come on, Yaz. You can put him in a coffee cup. Get that kid a glass, would you?
Hi.
I see coffee cups behind you. I'm sure we could grab one of those.
Oh, no, that was easier.
I just took a swig out of the bottle, don't worry.
There you go. Now you're already feeling my influence again.
So there we go. So your Passover finishes this weekend?
On Saturday, I believe.
Yeah.
Saturday at sundown, I think. And the kids are just waiting for it to, come all too quickly.
Yeah.
They're already kind of done with it. They want pizza. They want chicken nuggets.
Pizza is unleavened bread, isn't it?
No, it's got yeast in the dough.
I wonder
if you
could do a cauliflower crust. But they
Yeah, you could do that.
I think we did it last year, like a type of bread that you could make using matzah meal. And because there's such a vibrant Jewish population in Panama, you can find these ingredients readily, whereas where we are right now, very, very difficult for us to find kosher for Passover ingredients. So, you guys there have super kosher and delica. I think even like Reba and 99 had robust kosher sections with some options. So, you guys have a bit. I don't say it often, but you guys have more selection on that one than we do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's brought us to towards the end of this morning's breakfast show. It's nice to see you both. I like the look, Corey. It looks good.
Wait, it's like a
post-COVID.
Everybody looks good.
I like it. Now the kids want me to keep it.
Yeah, initially the kids were like, shave it. They hated it. And now they see pictures of him without it, and they think he looks weird.
It gives me a chance.
Uh-huh.
I had one of those.
Yeah. Now it extends it like 4 inches almost.
All right, just very quickly, Renee said the thing up. She says, I found this in El Rey the other day. High brew coffee, cold brew. Is it triple shot, black?
Okay.
Yeah.
She says, change your phone because now iPhone, the new iOS or whatever it is, now can recognize you with your mask on.
Oh, okay. That's good news. I appreciate that.
Basically, what it is that it'll recognize anybody with a mask. But if you're not wearing it, you're
not good.
I don't know.
Okay, anyway. Wait a minute. I went from thinking that was a good thing to a bad thing.
Anyway, we've got to go. Be back with you next week.
Excellent. Take care,
all right.
Guys.
All the best. Take care. All the best. There we are, that's our feisty foodie Sarah with us, joined by Corey this morning, which is nice. Great to see them both. Big thanks to them. Big thanks to my guest in the 8 o'clock hour this morning. That's Dr. Thomas Aroli. We'll have some information on our web today about the books, where you can find those. And Omri La Mancha, you can get the hard copies. I can tell you that. You can also get it on Amazon. So big thanks to Dr. Thomas, and also, of course, a big thank you to Yasmin, my producer here in the Breakfast Show studio, my co-producer Neil Danby, and also to Ingrid, our intrepid outdoor reporter. I'll be back with you at the same time tomorrow. That's 6 o'clock in the morning. Oh, must forget the boys and girls of Grupo Garrado. They'll never turn us on again, will they? A big thank you to them. And I'll be with you same time, 6 o'clock in the morning, whatever it is you're doing between now and then. Please, please do it carefully. I want to be talking to you tomorrow, not talking about you. From me, Jerry D. Till then, ta-da. You have been listening to The Breakfast Show, a Panama Broadcasting Corporation and Cool FM production. Presented by Jerry D. Produced by Yasmin Quiroz. Co-producer, Neil Danby. The Breakfast Show was brought to you thanks to Imprenta 24. You publish it, you'll sell it.